Pure goes into domestic animals and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
You know, my uncle was a dairy farmer with revolutionary ideas. He used to make all of his cows sleep on their backs.
Why was that?
So that in the mornings, the cream would come on top. My dachshund died yesterday.
Oh, I am sorry. How did it happen?
He was going round a tree when he met his end. Do you know, Seamus, I've got a new way of raising pigs, you know.
And how's that, Pat?
Well, you see, I feed them one day and then starve them the next, you see.
Why do you do that, Pat?
Well, that's the way people like their bacon, isn't it? Strip of fat, strip of lean, strip of fat. A New Yorker went out west to buy a cattle ranch, and a month or so later, a friend came out to visit him and asked what he'd called his new property. Well, said the owner, we had a lot of problems with that. You know, I wanted to call it one thing, my wife wanted to call it something else, my daughter had another name for it, and my son had another name. Eventually, to keep everyone happy, I decided to call it the Lazy J, Triple Diamond, Lucky Fours, North River Ranch. I see, said his friend, and where are all the cattle? Oh, none of them survived the branding.
Just a minute, Sonny. Why are you giving the cat bird seed? I didn't say feed the cat, I said feed the badger.
That's where the badger is.
Why do you have a chain on your dog?
Because he's a watchdog.
Why you give your cow when her were ill?
I gave her turpentine.
Oh, I gave mine turpentine. Died.
Ah, so did mine.
Groans, yes. I'm worried about the applause. The relationship between man and the animals which he surrounds himself with is quite complex, and frequently man seems to do best out of the deal. George Eliot noted one of the advantages of the arrangement.
Animals are such agreeable friends. They ask no questions, they pass no criticisms.
But men get a lot of things wrong in the relationship. Mark Twain.
It's just like man's vanity and impertinence to call an animal dumb because it is dumb to his dull perceptions.
And Martha Scott offered another caution.
Don't make the mistake of treating your dogs like humans, or they'll treat you like dogs.
Perhaps men should look elsewhere for a really satisfying relationship. Lawrence J. Peter.
The noblest of all dogs is the hot dog. It feeds the hand that bites it.
Mind you, when you visit a friend who's got a real dog, you may not get such a good welcome.
Oh, gee, this is a real nice place you got out here, Harry. It seems kind of lonely out here, you know. There aren't too many houses around. I imagine it gets kind of lonely at night, doesn't it? Oh, you have a dog, do you? Oh, sure, I'd love to see him. Where is he? In the backyard? Sure, let him in. Oh, yeah. Hi there, fella. Hi. Hi, boy. Boy, he's a lot heavier than he looked, isn't he, Harry? You just beat him, did you, Harry? Yes. What'd you get, Mary? Liver. Yeah. I thought that's what it was, Harry. He starts to bother me, just cuff him behind the ear. I sure will, Harry. What kind of dog is he, Harry? Doberman, is that right? They make great watchdogs, don't they? You nearly tore the burglar to pieces before you can get him off. Hi there, fella. Hi, boy. Oh, you're a pretty dog. What I like a what, Harry? A drink. Yeah, a drink would be fine, Harry. Scotch and water. You aren't going to have to leave the room, are you, Harry? Harry. Hi there, fella. Yeah, I don't suppose you want to get down, boy, do you? Just think like this. You want to play a little game, boy? Why chase the fountain pen, boy? Chase the fountain pen, boy. There you go, boy. Boy, you're a fast little dog. Why give me back the fountain pen, boy? Don't want to give me back the pen, huh, boy? Shoot up good. That's the way, boy. Swallow it, boy. Maybe it'll stick in your... We're going along just fine. No, he doesn't bother me at all. Oh, well, if you want to tell him to get down. Hi there, fella. Hi, boy. Boy, he sure looks harmless just laying there on the floor, doesn't he? Yeah, he chewed my fountain pen, Harry. Kind of looks like a chow there with that blue tongue, doesn't he? Oh, my drink, yeah. What'd I do, Harry? Any sudden movements, is that right? He was trained that way, was he? Where'd you get him from, Harry? The Army. Who's Army, Harry? Why'd they let him go, Harry? Don't tell me what he did to the general, Harry, would you? It was the general's fault, though. He acted afraid of the dog, did he? And they can sense that. Is that right? Just appear at ease. That'll make him relax. That sure makes a lot of sense, Harry. Or you just cross your legs. It's a little too sudden with that, Harry.
Bob Newhart. Feelings about dogs can run so high that they lead to marital strife. Here's an entry from Samuel Pepys' diary, November the 6th, 1660.
At night, my wife and I did fall out about the dog's being put down in the cellar, which I had a mind to have done because of his fouling the house, and I would have my will. And so we went to bed and lay all night in a quarrel.
Owners who lose their precious dog may go to extreme lengths to get it back. A report from the Sun.
Housewife Clara Peters, who promised a night of love to any man who found her lost dog, got a shock yesterday. Her wandering pet was brought home by the fire brigade. It was an embarrassing moment until the visitors assured her, "We're not here to collect the reward." The two firemen did collect a substitute reward, £10 each.
A dog is supposed to be man's best friend, or is he? Fran Lebowitz.
A dog who thinks he's man's best friend is a dog who obviously has never met a tax lawyer.
But dogs do have their disadvantages.
The trouble with dogs is they always know what you're thinking. They've got horrible clairvoyant minds that can see deep into yours. And they can always tell when you're frightened of them, which is always. Whenever I'm walking along the street and I see a dog, I try to pretend that I'm an extremely courageous person. Try to look completely unconcerned and nonchalant. Sometimes I hum a confident little song, you know, to put them off. I hum like, "If you think I'm afraid of you, you better have another thing or two. I'm not afraid, good gracious, no, you're wasting your time round here. Off you go." But the dog can always see through that. And he starts sizing up to me very slowly. So I try walking a bit faster, but without appearing to hurry or looking back. And I can feel the beastly dog creeping up on me, nearer and nearer and nearer. And then as soon as I look back and see where it is, it rushes up to me and starts sniffing around my ankles. And for no reason at all, and baring its horrible yellow teeth. The trouble is, you can never hit them or anything. If a dog starts biting you, you can't kick it up the throat like it deserves. People always say, "Oh dear, poor little dog. He was only trying to be friendly. That's the way he tries to be friendly, sniffing at your ankles and biting you, you cruel, wicked man." So you have to be very gentle with it and say, "Good dog, good dog, come along now. Stop it, there's a nice chap, good dog, there's a nice fellow. Nice fellow, my old boots, they're all in."
Peter Cook as E.L. Whisty. Dogs are often criticized for reasons of hygiene, and they do have some rather antisocial habits, particularly on footpaths. Fran Lebowitz had a conspiracy theory about this and described a new modern sport.
There has been erected in the stadium an exact replica of a 15-block section of Greenwich Village. 20 contestants leave buildings on the perimeter of this area, each walking 3 dogs who've not been out of the house all day. The object of the game is to be the first to get to the sidewalk directly in front of my building.
The trouble is that even when they're not fouling the footpath, dogs can be a bit messy in other ways. A short poem by Ogden Nash.
The truth I do not stretch or shove. When I state the dog is full of love, I've also proved by actual test a wet dog is the lovingest.
But your true dog lover is not put off by details. Here's a 5-year-old girl talking about her dog Buster.
Lady, I always kiss Buster right on the lips, but it isn't pleasant. So sometimes I put mouthwash in his doggy water.
Well, does that work?
It helps.
The Lily Tomlin. Some dogs, of course, have snob value. Here's a poem by Edgar Clauber entitled On Buying a Dog.
I wish to buy a dog, she said. A dog, you're sure, is quite well bred. In fact, I'd like some guarantee he's favored with a pedigree. My charming friend, the pet man, said, I have a dog that's so well bred, if he could talk, I'll guarantee he'd never speak to you or me.
There are a great many pitfalls for would-be dog buyers. Here's a report from the Daily Express.
A Surrey farmer who paid £65 for a sheepdog in Wales found it useless because it had been trained to answer commands in Welsh only. He complained that the seller had infringed the Trade Description Act.
The whole business of sheepdogs and sheepdog trials can be pretty confusing for the layman.
Well, good morning from the National Sheepdog Trials at Tillerton. We've had a fascinating morning here watching these truly intelligent dogs perform complex tasks guided only by the whistles of their masters. Now, I have with me Mr. Lee. Good morning, Mr. Lee.
Meh! Oh, you mean good morning.
Mr. Lee, I believe you've been a shepherd now for over 40 years.
Oh, no. No, no, no. I've been a shepherd now for over 35 years. 68 years I've been a shepherd now. Man and boy, not in that order, of course. The boy turns man later on.
Yes. If you could have your time all over again, would you still be a shepherd?
Oh, no. No, no. I'd like to do something interesting. I'd like to be something interesting, like, like being a shepherd. Like being a shepherd.
But you are a shepherd.
So I am. Look at old me.
Well, in your life, you must have trained many sheepdogs.
Oh, yes.
How many?
Oh, well over 2.
Over 2? Well, 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 2. Well, how do you train the dogs?
Oh, that's very simple. We use a little kindness and a lot of cruelty.
But you have to be cruel to the dog.
Oh, yes, very cruel. Very cruel indeed. I'm surprised it's allowed. Yes. Really nasty.
Yes, and mucky. Yes. And the distick we are with them. And the dogs drive the sheep.
The dogs drive the sheep into the pen. It's known as filling your pen. Ha ha ha! Shepherd's joke.
Yes. How do they drive the sheep?
Well, I know the old turnip, aren't you? Well, I tell you, the old dear. The dogs bark at the sheep, then they crawl up them on their bellies, then they nudge them with their noses, then they bury their fangs in them.
Oh, and then the dogs herd the sheep into the pen.
Ah, sometimes the sheep drive them into the pen, and then the dogs just sit there looking embarrassed, and everyone laughs at them, and I laugh at them too. I think it's very funny. My wife, she thinks it's funny.
Does she really?
She's got a great sense of humour, my
like
wife.
I like to meet her sometimes.
Ever since her accident.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear. How many sheepdogs have you?
It's a secret. I'm not telling you. It is the most holy secret that cannot and must not be divulged. 2.
Oh. Oh, you have 2 dogs.
You have 2 dogs?
Yes.
Where are they now?
Oh, well, one of them's over now. Where is he? Oh, over there by that pile of dead sheep. Magnificent brute, treacherous to a fault. Just have this little weakness for mutton.
Do the dogs kill the sheep?
Only in fun. And burying them in the ground and pulling their heads off. More humane.
Yes, well, perhaps you could get your dogs to give us a demonstration.
Oh, you don't need the dogs for that. You just bury the sheep in the pen.
No, no, could you get the dogs to drive the sheep into the pen?
Well, I've only got old Butcher here at the moment. I don't know where Crippin's gone to. He must be off after the judges. He senses they're his natural enemy.
Well, could you just put Butcher through his paces then?
All right, well, I'll get him to drive that sheep into that pen over there. Right.
Surely, Mr. Lee, shouldn't be. Mr. Lee, what is he doing? Mr. Lee, surely shouldn't be eating that sheep.
You took a mess.
Oh, goodness me, how awful. Oh, this is embarrassing.
Stop that, you thieving cur. I'll tear you apart with me bare hands.
Why, look at that. Swear he understands every word I say.
Tim Brooke Taylor and Graham Chapman. Dogs' traditional enemies, apart from sheep, are cats. And sometimes the conflict between the two species can be pretty ferocious. Another snippet from Samuel Pepys' diary.
So from him to Dr. Williams, who did carry me out into his garden where he hath abundance of grapes, and did show me how a dog that he hath do kill all the cats that come hither, to kill his pigeons, and do afterwards bury them, and do it with so much care that they shall be quite covered, that if but the tip of the tail hangs out, he will take up the cat again and dig the hole deeper. Which is very strange. He tells me that he do believe that he has killed above 100 cats.
Ambrose Bierce didn't show a great deal more charity to the species. We need to find the word in his devil's dictionary.
Cat, a soft, indestructible automaton provided by nature to be kicked when things go wrong in the domestic circle.
Don't kick ours. But cats, like dogs, can also inspire strong devotion. Here's an extract from John Locke's Voyage to Jerusalem, which demonstrates that the British had got their priorities sorted out back in 1553.
It chanced by fortune that the ship's cat leapt into the sea, which being down, kept herself very valiantly above water, notwithstanding the great waves still swimming. The which the master knowing, he caused the skiff with half a dozen men to go towards her and fetch her again when she was almost half a mile from the ship. I hardly believe they would have made such haste and means if one of the company had been in like peril.
And while we're on cats, let's hear an anonymous limerick.
There was a young curate of Kew who kept a tomcat in a pew. He taught it to speak alphabetical Greek, but it never got further than mew.
So, Muir, one disturbing thing about domestic animals is that every now and then you come across someone who thinks he can imitate them.
I do impressions, you know.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's the pig.
And very good, too.
I just do them for my own amusement, you know.
Obviously.
Mm.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Come to me here, please. You frighten the life out of me.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a cow being worried by a sheepdog.
Yes, I'm sorry you can't stop for tea, but we haven't got enough fish base to go round.
Tony Hancock and Kenneth Williams. Domestic animals frequently lead a pretty boring life, though some owners try to liven things up for them. Here's a description of such an owner by Fred Allen.
He pasted picture postcards around goldfish bowls to make the goldfish think they were going places.
However, in spite of such stimuli, animals don't always turn out as their owners would wish. A complaint from the critic John Ruskin.
I've got a cat, but she scratches, and I can't keep her tail out of the candles in the evening. And I've got a dog, a shepherd, who won't do anything wrong, but it's so horribly moral, it's more dull than I am myself.
Surprising bit of self-knowledge there, Victorian Ruskin. What you really need, of course, if you do get bored with your pets, is a used pet shop.
My Uncle Willard had this used pet shop. It was for used pets. And, yeah, there's always something wrong with them, you know. And so a guy came in one day and he said, how much is the doggy in the window?
That doggy out there in front? That dog ran you a dollar.
A dollar for a dog? Isn't that a little unusual?
No. I don't know whether you noticed or not, he ain't got no claws on his right paw. Sort of a conversation piece.
Yes, no, I wouldn't want that. What the devil's that over there?
Oh, that's an owl. I can give it to him for $3.75. You wouldn't know it, he ain't got no feathers on his body. I got it down Biloxi, and there was a storm come up or something, blew all his feathers off. And I've got purple feathers and chartreuse, and what you can do is put a little slickum on his belly and paste them on there, you know, and put him there in the parlor, and it's conversation piece like a dog. Yeah, I see. Oh, listen, incidentally, don't put your finger in that bowl. No, the reason I... Oh, took your finger off, didn't he? Oh, God, you know, it's a funny thing. We never have to feed that fish nothing. There's always some clown like yourself putting his finger in the bowl. Took it right off, didn't he? Oh, I bet that smart, don't it? That's a fun, you. Them things hit anything, hit anything. Got him in the Amazon River. I never got it. Some guy dropped off here one day. Over the bait shop. Listen, I'll tell you what I can do. I can give you that kangaroo over there for 10 and a half. Come all the way from Australia. Most of them do. I got him as far as Muncie, and he fell off a flat car and broke his tail. Now, you know, most of them sit back there on their tails like this. But this one, you got to lean again some.
No, I don't believe I had one fact.
I guess not. Listen, I've got a boa constrictor here. It's pregnant. I can give you that, and dead white rat's free. You want to see it? I'll let it out here. Oh, careful. Oh, Lord. Ma, come in here. That snake up and swallowed another customer.
Jonathan Winters. Perhaps the most noble of all the animals that man has domesticated is, of course, the horse. Nowadays, they're not used as much as beasts of burden, but there seems to be no lack of enthusiasm for riding them. And keen riders start very young. Let's hear Sir John Betjeman's poem, Hunter Trials.
It's awfully bad luck on Diana. Her ponies have swallowed their bits. She fished down their throats with a spanner and frightened them all into fits. So now she's attempting to borrow. Do lend her some bits, Mummy, do. I'll lend her my own for tomorrow. Today, I'll be wanting them too. Just look at Prunella on Guzzle, the wizardest pony on earth. Why doesn't she slacken his muzzle and tighten the breech in his girth? I say, Mummy, there's Mrs. Geezer. And doesn't she look pretty sick? I bet it's because Mona Lisa was hit on the hock with a brick. Miss Blewett says Monica threw it. But Monica says it was Joan. And Joan's very thick with Miss Blewett, so Monica's sulking alone. And Margaret failed in her paces. Her withers got tied in a noose, so her coronet's caught in the traces. And now all her fetlocks are loose. Oh, it's me now. I'm terribly nervous. I wonder if Smudges will shy. She's practically certain to swerve as her pelham is over one eye. Wasn't it naughty of Smudges? Oh, Mummy, I'm sick with disgust. She threw me in front of the judges and my silly old collarbones bust.
There's something about any competition involving horses that seems to accentuate the Britishness of the British.
And now jump off for the horse of the hour. It's Colonel Spilotti riding Carmelito. Colonel Spilotti rides in the very slipshod manner, typical continental horsemanship. Doesn't seem to have a great deal of control over Carmelito, probably because he's used to the Italian position. Here he is coming up for the first jump. Very bad approach, a very bad approach indeed, that. Barely cleared it by 5 feet. Very, very ropey now, indeed. Coming up the second round now. Oh, he's taking off far too early. Far too early. Oh, bit of luck there. The wind changed in his favor at the last moment, and he just scraped over by 6 feet. He's approaching the last jump now. He'll be a very lucky man indeed if he clears this one. It's the water jump. But, oh, back off there. Just barely scraped over. A very, very lucky chair round there. And the second contestant, as you can hear, is, of course, Miss Pat Smooth, riding gay lady. There's Miss Pat Smooth, riding gay lady. Such a favorite team, long seen here in London with the Amalgamated Dairy Company, and a very great favorite since 1962. Gay lady, of course, out of quadrille by Happy Warrior, and Miss Smooth by Mrs. Smooth and Lieutenant Colonel Smithers, one of the greatest England has ever known. That's coming up to the first jump now. Perfect position for takeoff. Oh, a splendid recovery. Rather bad luck there with the wind. Suddenly landing there with belly close to the ground, back arched, legs beautifully positioned, and nostrils distended. And gay lady didn't make a bad landing either. Here they come to the second jump now. It's wonderful to watch the team they make. Miss Smooth and Gay Lady. Perfect partnership, molded together. Sometimes it's a little difficult to tell for which is which. Oh, bad luck. They're very bad. She did the same thing in Argentina last year. Oh, yes, what bad luck seems to have followed her here. She's coming into the last jump now, the water jump. Oh, lovely approach. She's timed it beautifully. Gay Lady's refused. Oh, wait a minute. Miss Moore has accepted. She's going to walk down herself. Oh, what a beautiful smile. This wonderful young English woman.
Michael Bentine. Before we leave domestic animals, let's just hear Motto for a Doghouse by Arthur Gitterman.
I love this little house because it offers, after dark, a pause for rest, a rest for pause. Place to moor my bark.
Next week, Alfred and I will be looking at birds. Till then, from both of us.
Ow, ow, ow! Ow!
Goes into Domestic Animals was written by Simon Brett and produced by Richard Edis.